This is Grow in Grace, a daily teaching ministry of Palmetto Baptist Church in Greenville, South Carolina. Would you rather give or receive gifts this time of year? Christmas is a time where we show our love to one another through the act of giving presents. This should remind us of the greatest gift ever given, the advent of Emmanuel, God with us. Today, Pastor Sam will begin a sermon from Matthew 2 entitled, The Royal Authority and Glorious Majesty of Jesus' Name. Let's listen together so we can grow in grace.
Well, I'd like to ask you to take your Bible this morning to Matthew chapter 2. And as we turn there, during the Advent season, one of the things that all of us enjoy, I think, is we get to sing hymns and songs about the birth of the Lord that we normally don't sing throughout the rest of the year. And I don't know why we don't sing them the rest of the year, but we typically bing them out and 4 or 5 weeks before the week that we observe the Lord's birth, and maybe for a week or two after, we sing these hymns together. And you know them as Christmas carols. And most of the Christmas carols that we sing come right out of the gospel story of the birth of the Lord that's taught either in the book of Matthew or in the book of Luke. And so I put together a little list of Christmas carols that, and I want you to think about this. Think about the Christmas carol, O come, Emmanuel. And that comes right out of Matthew chapter 1, verse 23. The hymn, Silent Night. I'm not sure it was silent, but it was night. Silent Night comes out of Luke chapter 2, verse 8. And that same text gives us, O Holy Night. And so I know many of you know that hymn. Angels We Have Heard on High comes out of Luke chapter 2, verses 10 through 14. Just like Hark the Herald Angels comes right out of that same text. Joy to the World comes out of Luke chapter 2, verse 10. Luke chapter 2, verse 8 gives us the hymn, It Came Upon a Midnight Clear. Away in a Manger comes out of Luke chapter 2, verse 7. And O Little Town of Bethlehem comes right out of the text that we're looking at this morning, Matthew chapter 2, verse 1. Now, what you may not know about all of those carols that I just mentioned, none of them were written in America. It wasn't until many years later in 1857 that the first Christmas carol ever written in America came to be. And it happened to be written by a seminary professor who had been asked to direct a Christmas pageant for his seminary. And so as he was putting this pageant together, he needed a song that would go with a part of the pageant he was working on. And so he wrote the hymn, he wrote the carol that I'm about to mention. And it has been, I think, a law of the Medes and Persians that if you ever have a Christmas pageant in a church or a school, it is a law that this Christmas carol has to be part of that production. In fact, many of you here, how many of you, let's just take a little survey, how many of you in your younger years were coerced, bribed, or forced by your mom or your dad to have a part in the Christmas play that your church was putting on or your school was putting on? Can I see your hands? I see that testimony to pain and anguish being lifted up before the Lord. So you know exactly what's coming. The hymn or the carol is We Three Kings of Orient Are. Remember that? You remember that? How could we forget that? And some of you dressed up in your dad's bathrobe or in some other long flowing garment that came out of your mom's closet, and you put on your head some kind of a cardboard crown that you made or that your mom artfully made for you, and you marched on stage at the right time, bearing your gifts to the manger where the little infant Jesus was, and you joined the shepherds and the sheep and the stray camel that made its way there, whatever else happened to be, depending on the nature of the production. And so this Christmas carol has made its way into our psyche and into our thinking. And I hate to disabuse us of a hymn that has such a storied tradition in our lives, but do you realize that there's a lot of theological issues that got obscured when Mr. Hopkins wrote that hymn for his Christmas pageant? For example, they weren't kings. That immediately destroyed a whole bunch of Christmas cards you sent out this year. And so hopefully you won't do that again next year. They weren't kings. And secondly, there's no indication in the text that there were only three of them. In fact, there is good indication that there were a lot more than three that came together into the city of Jerusalem. And so I want us this morning to look at the Christmas pageant that Matthew describes in the first two chapters. And as Matthew unfolds the birth of Christ, if he were writing it as a Christmas pageant, there would be five parts to it. The first part is in Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 through 17. I'll give you them very quickly so you can at least sort of locate chapter 2 in the big play that or pageant that Matthew is giving us. In Act 1, or part 1 of that pageant, is in verses 1 through 17 of chapter 1, where Matthew predicts this amazing birth as a royal birth, a covenant birth. It is a messianic birth. And he's going to take you through generations of the lineage of the baby that is about to be born to help you understand that he comes from the right line. He's going to be born at the right time, and he's going to be born at the right place. And so that's act number one. Act number two, verses 18 through the end of chapter 2, focus our attention on the miraculous means of this birth, its theological significance, and its divine intention. He, this infant, this Emmanuel, is God with us. And he will save his people from their sins. And we looked at that a week or so ago. The third act in Matthew's drama is what we're looking at this morning. In Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12, Matthew points us to the royal overtones and the global reach of the rule of the one who is the rightful king of Israel by birth and not by political appointment or human strength or crafty scheming. Act 4 is the next part of chapter 2, verses 13 through 18. And they reveal, Matthew reveals, that this born king of Israel will become the representative for the entire nation of Israel. He will become the new Israel. And he will render obedience to God and fulfill the mission that God gave Israel to the nations. It's a stunning thing that Matthew does in Act 4. And then in Act 5, Matthew culminates this pageant. He ends the pageant in verses 19 through 23 of chapter 2 by presenting Jesus, the Messiah, as the new Moses, who will lead his people on a new exodus into a new kingdom that God the Father is establishing for him. This is a stunning portrait and a beautiful pageant that Matthew is presenting. And we're going to drop in on the third part, the middle part of that pageant in verses 1 through 12 of chapter 2 that point to the royal overtones and the global reach of Messiah's rule. Now, let's let Matthew kind of set the stage for us and guide us through what we're doing as we meet the Magi here in our text. And the first thing that Matthew does when this part of the play comes online and the curtain rises is he introduces us to a surprising location. It's not what we expected, and you can see it right away in verse 1. Now, after Jesus was born, and then we're told exactly where he was born, in Bethlehem. Now, you and I, for thousands of years, have been in a tradition that knows where the birth of Jesus was. We have all our life heard about Bethlehem. We know a lot about Bethlehem. We know, for example, and we're well aware that it was the city of Ruth where she came and met Boaz. We know, for example, that it was the place where Jesse lived and later where David was born. And so we know a lot about Bethlehem, but if you lived in the first century and somebody said the word Bethlehem to you, you might not even know where it was. It was a little tiny village, maybe 5 miles from the major hub of life in Israel, and that would be Jerusalem. It was about an hour's walk. Many of you have been on trips to Israel, and you have made your way to modern Bethlehem, and even modern Bethlehem is tiny and difficult to get to. And so if you lived in the first century, nobody had Bethlehem on their mind. But Matthew is trying to show you a problem that God has to resolve. And the problem is this. The prophets all predicted that the birth of Messiah would happen in the town of Bethlehem. And the problem is that Joseph and Mary are way up in Nazareth. When we ended chapter 1, when Act 2 in Matthew's drama closed, it closed on Joseph taking Mary to be his wife, just like the angel said, after he had been working hard to resolve a problem that had upturned his world. But we left him in Nazareth, and the issue is, how are we going to get Joseph and Mary to Bethlehem all the way on the other side of the country? And unbeknownst to us, there's another group of people who have to get all the way to Bethlehem, and they live a long way away, a whole lot further away than Joseph and Mary lived. They didn't live in Nazareth. They lived all the way in Persia, and particularly in the region of Babylon. And there's a group of men that have to get from Babylon all the way to Bethlehem. And so how in the world is God going to resolve this dilemma? And I would suggest to you that as Matthew introduces the location of this birth, he wants you to think about the fact that God is going to move everything on earth and everything in heaven to get everybody exactly where they need to be, when they need to be there for this monumental moment in history. To get Joseph and Mary to Bethlehem, God moved amazingly on the earth. In fact, he moved in the heart of the most powerful man on the planet at that time. His name was Caesar Augustus. And you'll remember in Luke chapter 2, which is not part of our text this morning, that Luke tells us that it came into the mind of the most powerful man on the planet, the emperor of the Roman Empire, that the entire world should be taxed. And as that idea began to foment in his mind, he began to act on that idea, and eventually a decree went out that the whole world had to be taxed. And the way it worked was that you had to go and be registered in the particular city of your house. And we've already discovered in Matthew chapter 1 that Joseph was of the house of David. And that's why in Luke chapter 2, after God moved all the way in the heart of the emperor of Rome, Caesar Augustus, that decree went out and it had earth-shaking effects for a young couple in the tiny village of Nazareth, and they made their way, Mary in the fullness of her pregnancy, all the way down to David's city. And David's city was not Jerusalem where he ruled. David's city was Bethlehem. Isn't it stunning how God worked and how God moved? God didn't just move on the earth, God moved in the heavens. In verse 2 of our text, wise men came from the east saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews?" And the reason we're asking this, the reason we're here, is because we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him. Matthew records the arrival of a group of men, magi, who traveled from the east. And what prompted their difficult and dangerous journey and lengthy journey was the sudden appearance of a star in the constellations over the heavens where they were located. Now, we don't really know what this star was. And there is a whole lot that has been written about the star. In fact, there's as much written about the star as there is about anything else in the text. And I don't want you to get lost in the star. Some people believe it was a brand new star. Some people think it was a comet. Some people think it was an unusual planetary alignment. Some believe it was an angel. And some believe that it was a particular manifestation of the Shekinah glory of God, just like it appeared in Exodus to lead the people of God as a pillar of fire. We don't know exactly what it was, but we do know three things about this star. Here they are. In the world of these magi, the appearance of a star like this was always associated with the birth of an important world ruler. The second thing we know is that the star moved in very unusual ways that were not normal or typical for planetary heavenly objects. And number three, the appearance and the movement and the function of this star were supernaturally orchestrated by God. In other words, this star was no ordinary star. It had an extraordinary function, and its function was to bring these magi from where they were to Bethlehem, while Caesar Augustus and his decree were designed to bring Joseph and Mary to Bethlehem. Isn't it stunning that the God of heaven works things on earth and things in heaven to get everybody to the right place at the right time? And I would just suggest to you that the same God who worked this in Luke 2 and in Matthew 2 is at work in your life. And he's at work in my life. God is not remiss in getting us to the exact place we need to be at the exact time we need to be there, and he's going to use divine providence to get us there. You're not here this morning by accident. You're not where you are in your stage in life by accident. When I meet people, I often say to them, well, where are you from? And they'll say, well, I'm from here. And my next question is, well, what brought you here? And I will often get a whole list of things that happened. Well, this went on, and it had this effect, and we decided to do this. And then we knew somebody, and here we ended up. And I'm thinking, the God of heaven has been at work. The God of heaven has been at work. And that's exactly how Matthew begins this third act in his drama. Now, what has God been at work doing? And that's the second thing that Matthew wants us to notice. And he kind of phrases it in the form of a troubling revelation. When these magi show up, now, by the way, nobody noticed when Jesus and Mary showed up. Here's a humble couple from the north part of the land, and they came on a very humble beast of burden with very few possessions. You could tell they'd been on a long trip. Mary was heavy with child. There was nothing special to the outward eye when you looked at this couple. But when the magi showed up, and they would not have traveled with just one or two, they would have traveled with a huge litany of people, a large sort of group that came into the city of Bethlehem, their arrival would have been noted. And when they started asking their questions, their arrival not only would have been noted, it would have made its way to Herod. Wise men came from the east to Jerusalem saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled. Last May, Beth and I had the privilege of being over in Israel leading a study tour, and our guide took us to all the places that Herod built. Herod is one of the most incredible figures in the history of the ancient world. He's one of the few people that if you just put his name into a search engine, you're going to come immediately to the right person, Herod the Great. And our guide kept saying, Herod the Great is the greatest story never told. And I'm not sure that that's the case, but Herod had a storied history. He was born in BC 72, and he had been appointed by Rome to be the king over these regions, the region of Israel. He was not the legitimate king. He did not have a Davidic lineage. He didn't have a birthright to that throne. But when Rome's in charge and they say Herod is the king, then Herod's the king. And that's why three times in the text, Matthew wants you to realize that we're dealing with a man who's the king. It didn't matter what you thought as an Israelite. It didn't matter if you questioned his lineage or you questioned his Jewishness or you questioned anything else about him. He was the client king of Rome. And one thing about Herod was this. He had been on that throne for almost 35 years. And at the end of his life, he dies in 4 BC. And the one thing that Herod cares more about than anything else is that throne. Nobody is going to take that throne. And it doesn't matter who you are. If I think you're going to touch the throne, you're done. And so he executes one of his favored wives. He executes two of his sons because he thinks they might have an eye for the throne. So you can imagine what happens when these incredibly decked out magi show up and they're asking about a king, a born king, a king who actually has Davidic rights to sit on that throne. You can imagine how this troubled Herod. In fact, the word troubled is a very strong word. It's the idea of deep anxiety, deep alarm. Herod is absolutely beside himself. Because he knew that the game was up. It's interesting that Herod doesn't ask any questions about the identity of this child. He doesn't ask any questions about the timing of his birth, other than wanting to know when the star appeared. He is really concerned about the location of the birth. And he doesn't address the wise men when he questions them, or the priests and the scribes. He doesn't ask them, where is the born king of Israel to be born? He literally says, where is Messiah to be born? He suspected, I believe, that this infant was, in fact, the long-awaited Messiah. And he knew one thing, that when Israel's Messiah showed up, he was going to sit on David's throne, which meant he was going to touch the thing that mattered most to Herod. You know, when Jesus shows up in your life, he's going to touch the thing that matters most to you. He's going to touch the thing that matters most to me. There are things that matter so much to us that our eye is always on them. Our ear is always open. Our thinking is always about how to protect that thing. Maybe it's a plan that we have. Maybe it's something we intend to do for the Lord. And somebody comes along and says, I don't know if you should do that. All of a sudden, our hackles go up because that's what we're going to do. It can even sound very spiritual like that. And Herod had his eye on the throne, and here was the Messiah.
Thank you, Pastor Sam. We'll continue this sermon next time on Grow in Grace. Today's speaker, Dr. Sam Horn, is the pastor for teaching and vision at Palmetto Baptist Church. PBC meets at 2730 Anderson Road, Greenville, South Carolina. Join us for our worship service at 9:30 a.m. every Sunday morning, or find us online at pbcpowdersville.org. If you have any questions about today's sermon or about Palmetto Baptist Church, please email radio@pbcpowdersville.org. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time so together we can grow in grace.